Hello, I'm Brandon.
And I'm Justine.
And this is The Cozy Co-op, a podcast made by a video game journalist and creative writer to talk about video games. Hi, Justine. How are you?
I'm good. I just had some coffee, so I'm a little bit, like, amped up.
I did, too, and I am remaining lethargic. So, the number they're in and our ad from last segment, massive hit. We are now millionaires.
Oh, excellent. So we don't even need to do this podcast.
No, we have sold out episode 2 already. This is our goodbye episode.
Okay.
I think I'm going to buy a solid gold ficus. What are you going to do with your million?
I don't know. I don't have any ideas. I'm going to put it in savings.
I'm putting you on the spot.
We didn't prep this.
So, today we're talking about Portal.
Yes.
The first one, technically both games, really, just encompassing Portal.
I know in our first episode I said my favorite video game genre is RPGs, but I think a very close second is puzzle games, even though I'm not really good at puzzle games.
I love me a good puzzle game.
I just like, you know, the puzzles.
They tickle my brain.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, we got a few news things here. So, you familiar with the recent trend of Battle Royale games? PUBG,
yeah.
Fortnite?
And it confuses me a little bit. Like, I just don't see the draw to Battle Royale games.
It's a competitive thing, you know?
I'm not competitive, so that explains why I don't see the draw.
Neither am I, so I'm not that interested. Well, they've been getting super popular, as I'm sure a lot of people have noticed, and now a lot of the big ones, i.e. Fortnite and PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, are making mobile apps.
Okay.
I feel weird about that one. And, yeah, I feel very strange, because in my mind it's kind of showing that it's becoming the new industry trend thing, and that it's going to die in a year from now.
Yeah, it makes me think of those top-down war games, you know?
MOBAs?
Well, yeah, but
oh,
I'm
no,
talking
the thing,
about,
like, Clan of War,
yeah,
and Modern
Clash
Assault.
Of Clans,
and
yeah, like, that's what it makes me think of, because it's kind of an easy thing to get into, and you can get a whole bunch of, like, you can probably do a lot of in-app purchases to get cooler stuff or cooler characters and stuff.
I don't know if they have, I want to say that there are microtransactions, I don't know what they are.
But it makes me think of that, where it's, like, a fairly basic concept, you just throw a bunch of stuff into it, and then a lot of people can crank those out.
Yeah.
I not to diss people who like Battle Royale games, I don't want to sound like I'm talking trash about it, but it's just, it makes me think of those Clash of Clans games, especially now that it's coming out for mobile.
I understand. It's funny how just adding it to another ported system like that can make you think less of it.
Yeah.
Other thing, THQ Nordic is, you've probably played their games before, they have working with Nickelodeon to revive old Nickelodeon games. So, like, you know those games where you can play, like, Rocket Power Saves the Beach,
oh
or
God,
SpongeBob Battle of Bikini Bottom,
okay,
like, all of those?
I actually want to tell you, like, one of the games I wish we could add to our list is this one SpongeBob game I played when I was little. Like, it
Which
was
one?
For, it was for the Xbox.
Do you know the name?
I would have to look it up, I think.
There's a lot of SpongeBob games.
I know, but this one was like 3D graphics, and oh god, I can like remember visuals and certain things that happened, but I can't remember what it was called or what the point of it was.
Was it based on the movie?
I don't think so.
Because that's the SpongeBob game I played. It was based on the movie. And like, I want to give it a hard time, but it was kind of fun.
I mean, the one I played was fun, too. It was, like, really frustrating at times, but it was also almost like a fever dream. It was very weird.
That
but
sounds
that's
like
kind
a
of,
Nickelodeon video
that's
game.
It's kind of SpongeBob's shtick, so.
But yeah, so we're expecting to see a lot of those old games, the kind that are the only available option at your local Family Video.
Yeah.
Coming to stores again.
I kind of hope that they, you know, what are they doing? Reviving. So does that mean they're porting them for different systems?
See, they've not exactly said what that means yet.
Okay.
But they did say, like, here's a bunch of the cartoons that we're bringing back. And, like, yeah, Rocket Power, SpongeBob.
I swear to God, I'm going to buy every Rocket Power game. Oh, I loved all those old cartoons.
But you can, I'll have a link in the show notes to the list of all of the actual games that they plan on doing. Last bit of news is Nintendo is hosting another tournaments at this year's E3, containing a world championship for Splatoon 2, as well as an invitational for the upcoming Super Smash Bros. Game.
Okay.
Now, this is interesting to me because we know nothing about the new Smash Bros. Game.
Yeah, so they're already announcing a tournament for it?
Yeah, which means we're going to see something, and people are going to like pick every bit of information they can out of that. And I'm, as somebody who's super into Smash Bros. Himself, like, I'm very excited to see what they're going to let us see.
So they're doing the tournament at E3?
I believe so.
So they're doing a tournament for a game that hasn't released yet.
Mm-hmm.
That seems so spoiler heavy.
Well, they did that last time, too.
Oh, okay.
2014, they invited a bunch of professional Smash players, Mango, Hungrybox, Zero, to play Smash for the Wii U before it came out.
Okay.
And then the winner, like this, oh, this was a fun little thing. So in the end, the winner, guy named Hungrybox, good mm-hmm. dude, very good at what he does. He won, and then Reggie Fils-Aimé, the president of Nintendo of America, came out and said, hey, everyone, Smash is also coming to the 3DS. I'm a busy guy, so I'll maybe have time to play it on my commute. So 1 year from now, I'm going to invite you, Hungrybox, to come back here, and we're going to fight, and I'm going to kick your ass.
Oh, my God.
And people lost their mind, because the president of Nintendo of America just said he's going to kick the ass of the best Smash player in the world at the time. A year passes, he comes by. He did not kick his ass.
Oh, no,
it
yeah.
was, oof.
Had a feeling.
It was rough. But we're expecting to see a similar thing here as well.
Okay.
No, that's it on the news. So, Portal.
We're talking about Portal.
Portal.
Which is another childhood nostalgia thing for me. We actually had to discuss this when we said we were going to do Portal. Because I mentioned that when I was a kid, I remember feeling like it was some kind of important thing because I had said that I thought it really only came on the orange box. You couldn't buy it independently and we had to look it up. And yeah, when it first released in 2007, I think, yeah, 2007, it was only bundled into the orange box, which they had used to release Half-Life 2 Episode 2,
mm-hmm.
along with a few other games. And I have a feeling, and I couldn't necessarily find anything to verbally confirm this, but I had a feeling that it wasn't supposed to be the smash hit that it was, because, and we had to look into the history of it, but it was a college student project that was at some sort of, like, I don't remember what the name of it was, but it's kind of like a film festival, but like, for games.
I almost want to call it EpiPen, but I know that's not correct.
No, that's not
Optiplex?
I don't remember, but yeah, some college students had it, you know, they were displaying their project or whatever, and the Valve team saw it, and they liked it so much that they not only adopted the game concept, it wasn't called Portal at the time. Oh man, I didn't write down what it was called.
Doing these hardworking college kids a disservice.
Well,
even though they're probably like 35
I
now.
Know, but not only did Valve kind of adopt this concept, but they adopted the college team that had worked on it too, and they worked with their own writers and this new squad of students
mm-hmm.
to create Portal. And so initially it had started out as this puzzle game where you use portals on flat surfaces to get through levels of puzzles. And they slapped on a lightweight story that loosely tied it in with Half-Life and just bundled it in with the orange box. And I don't think they expected it to be huge because, again, it was like it was this project. It was a student project
yeah.
that they just kind of took on and polished it up and threw it in with the bundle. But it just got huge, huge ratings. Like, everyone loved it.
And when people saw that it was so good, and then Valve saw that people liked it so much, they're like, well, we got to make this its own thing.
Yeah, they released it into, like, on its own in 2008.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's how I came across it, is I don't remember why I got it, but yeah, I had gotten it on console.
Yeah. How old was I in 2007? I don't even recall.
I don't know. You might make our fan base feel old.
I know. I'm sorry.
Portal is a childhood memory.
I'm only 21, so let's see. It's 2018. So 2007 was 11 years ago.
Yes.
That's so math. I was 10.
Nice.
When this game came out. And I thought I was younger, but I was 10. And I remember my dad had gotten the orange box. And that was one of the games that my siblings and I could play without my mom guilting us about. She didn't like us playing Halo, even though we really only did the co-op thing where you could, you know, just run around on a map.
Yeah, Halo co-op is just so much fun, though.
It is, except that she really didn't like us shooting each other.
That's understandable.
She really hated that. But in Portal, you can't kill anybody, and it's just a puzzle game. So I think that was one. It was an adult video game as far as I viewed it, because it was something that the big kids were playing, but I could play it easily enough. It was pretty accessible to me as a kid.
My adult video game tag is much different.
No, you know what I mean. It was not a Barbie game or a Nickelodeon game. Like it was like a polished, well done video game that I could play and not worry about my mom judging me.
Coming Back by THQ Nordic is Portal Battle for Bikini Bottom.
No. So that was something I really genuinely liked about Portal, was it was fun and it was accessible to kids too. And in doing some research on the background of it, I learned that it's used a lot for educational purposes too.
As far as
teaching like STEM subjects such as physics and technology and chemistry and science and stuff like that. But it's also been used to teach some more psychological and, you know, like psychology fields. And in particular, something that the wiki mentioned was it is used to teach like examples and stuff about something called dramaturgy.
That's where you forge actors in iron.
No.
Right? No?
No. It's where you, as far as I understand the concept, it is the idea that your behavior and who you are is dependent on the scenario that you're currently in.
Okay.
So your personality and stuff reflects your surroundings in the idea that, you know, kind of like an actor in a play is dependent on the scene.
Okay. So it's like, what's it called? The bystander effect? Like, the more people that's around you, the less likely you are to take action?
Yeah, and I wasn't exactly sure how this related to Portal, other than that maybe they study how Chell or the player reacts when you're the only one there and the only other thing communicating with you is a giant, malicious robot.
I think it's, you know, if you... I think it might be that GLaDOS, the robot...
Mm-hmm.
Is experimenting with dramaturgy. She's taking you, the player, putting you in these particular situations to see how you react. On the game side, it's a puzzle, yeah. But on GLaDOS's side, it's she wants to know what happens when she surrounds you with acid and bullets, and then she wants to know what happens when you have to burn your only cube-based friend.
Okay, that does make sense, because, you know... Well, the way I was thinking about it is GLaDOS is testing the portal gun, but GLaDOS is also
testing...
No,
she's testing the people.
She's testing the users. She knows the gun works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. All right. Do you want to talk about why the game is so cool?
Portal is extremely clever with its mechanics. Like, oh, you're thinking with portals. You know, internet reference. But it was kind of... I don't want to say it's the first time, because I might be wrong. I don't want to say that. But it is one of the... It's the first popularization of the concept of using portals to do things like this. Because...
Mm-hmm. And it's not super common anyway. Like,
because now if somebody tries, they're going to be like, oh, it's a portal clone. They've monopolized themselves with quality. And it's incredibly complicated. Like, you were saying how it's used in STEM courses. Portal, even still today, is used in an example for programming classes, because the code required to make that work is not easy.
Yeah, I mean, it just bends my brain trying to get
it
done.
It leans in the direction of quantum. It's just so jank. And yet, it's applied into the game in such a way that, you know, no one's really that confused by it. Mm-hmm. Like, the environment puzzles they're given may leave somebody stumped, but, like, how to use the portals, more oftentimes than not, they understand. And it's not, like, a one-way thing, either. You don't just, oh, if I put a portal here and here, I can move from that spot to this spot quicker. Sometimes it's, how can I conserve my own momentum? How can I manipulate the direction of things that I need? How can I confuse, you know, the nearby robots? It's such a simple concept with a surprisingly diverse tool set behind it.
The original portal specifically kind of reminds me of something called a TRX, which is what Marines use to continue working out even when they're deployed.
Oh, right.
They can't carry around a bunch of workout equipment, so they have these straps that you can pretty much attach anywhere, like to the side of your truck or to wherever you're stationed, and you use your own body weight to improve your muscle strength. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, so you use these straps and stuff to work out, and that's what the first Portal game makes me think of, because you don't have the gels and the things that you have in the second game. You don't have any other tools other than your portal gun and, like, boxes occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need to launch yourself or a box or something, you use your own momentum through the portals. So nothing is going to make you faster. You don't even get to run. You just kind of use physics and falling speed to get yourself launched.
And, like, there's instances to where you'll go through an entire level without ever technically touching the ground, because you'll use your own gravity to launch yourself upward.
Right.
Wonderful, clever. And, of course, you've got those things on your legs to keep you from breaking them.
That is something else I super, super appreciate. So, like, I love a game without fall damage because I like to jump off of things. But I really like the fact that in Portal, they give you a reason why you don't have fall damage.
Well, I think they would have kind of needed to, because, like, when they're trying to take the scientific approach to things,
right,
you can't have illogical aspects. Like, sure, the concept of a portal gun or the fact that these weird shoe heels, whatever, negate all fall damage, that's questionable. But at least they address the fact that you don't just have super calves.
Well, I was told that in, like, all sci-fi, in all, like, I don't want to say, like, good sci-fi, but if you're going to write about a science fiction story, I was told there's a few sets of rules. And one of those rules is you are allowed one thing that you don't have to explain. So in a lot of spacefaring sci-fi, it's artificial gravity.
Gotcha.
So we still don't know how that would work or how you could do it on each individual spaceship and whatnot. So people just have artificial gravity and nobody says anything about it. In Portal, I assume it's the portal gun, the portal technology, but the rest of it is, like, it's just robotics.
Well, they explain the portal gun.
No, I mean, I know, but, I mean, build a portal gun.
Yeah, that's true. How did they put, I think there's a black hole?
Yeah.
How did they put a black hole inside of this gun? That's
right.
Fair.
So
how they achieved the technology.
You get one crazy thing, and then the rest of it is you go through and...
Well, and another thing I love about Portal is that they are the kooky, they being Aperture Science, the kooky, unsuccessful mess of a company compared to Black Mesa.
Yeah, the weird gay cousin counterpart to the business Black Mesa.
It's in the same universe as Half-Life, and, you know, Black Mesa, they figured out how to create a portal to another world, and then you've got Aperture Science just throwing science at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Exactly, yeah.
To quote J.K. Simmons. Is that his name?
I mean, that's the voice actor, but
yeah, Cave Johnson.
Cave Johnson, yeah.
God, Cave Johnson. That was a great voiceover role.
It really he did a fantastic job.
So, speaking of Aperture Science and how wonderful of a company they are, here's a word from our sponsors.
Aperture Laboratories is the home of the leading scientific program specializing in portal science and portal science-related deaths. Through our leading aggressive recruitment program, you can be a part of this technologically advanced miracle of science. Join Aperture Laboratories to become a subject within our leading number of endless testing opportunities. Become one of our hundreds, thousands of leaders.
So aside from the I would you call them like groundbreaking mechanics? Because it really was kind of the first of its kind.
Whenever I don't know if it was the first of things, but I know that it was a big deal, I'd say it popularized it.
Yes.
Which, yes, it definitely popularized the mechanics.
So aside from this, just the concept of it being really novel to most people, the story is surprisingly dense for it being so simple.
So it started simple, for sure.
It does, because they wanted to tie it in with Half-Life.
Mm-hmm.
So if this was just its own thing, I don't think we would have had this level of creepy science to it, or even be as involved in it, like emotionally.
Yeah.
Because it exists within a world people were already familiar with. So it already has its own kind of lore before you even get started.
Makes sense.
That gives it a little bit more foundation. And the thing with this whole storyline is you can pretty much sum it up in a sentence. You're a test subject that wakes up, like an AI wakes you up, and it sends you through test after test after test with this portal gun. And you eventually escape this testing purgatory by using the tools you have been learning to use this entire game.
You know that a common fan theory is that the Portal game is purgatory? It's like this one big symbolism for it?
Well, that's what I'm going to get to as well, is it has this simple concept. And when you have a simple concept like this, it inevitably gets related to much deeper theories and concepts and stuff, usually religious.
Gotta love those religious fan theories.
Yeah, so everyone talks about it being purgatory. And I do have a similar idea to propose, not necessarily from a Christian or, I think purgatory is the mostly Christian thing. I don't know. I don't want to say that one. But less Christian-based, more ancient Greek, actually.
Okay.
So there is one of my favorite myths in Greek mythology is that of Sisyphus.
Oof, that's a name.
I know, you don't want to say that
one. I'm not going to.
Sisyphus, for those who don't know, his story is a little bit varied. There's several different versions, but when he was human and alive on Earth, he did something. He stole something from the gods, he did something in battle or whatever. Something that got the gods angry, and so when he died, they condemned him to a specific type of hell in Hades. And I don't mean a level, I mean they gave him something that made his own corner of hell specific to Sisyphus.
Okay.
And this is what most people are familiar with, he rolls a rock up a hill.
Oh yeah.
And then when he gets to the top of the hill, the rock rolls back down and he has to do it again. And he does that for all eternity as punishment for what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even though I can't remember specific things that he was said to have done when he was living. If you look at them in pretty much all of the versions of the myths, it's usually not harmful to other humans. It's mostly just irritating for the gods. So whether or not he actually did anything to help other humans, it's usually nothing that harmed them. And in that regard, I mean, it seems like he wasn't deserving of his punishment as far as we're concerned. So he did something that he probably believed was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Something useful. And then the gods punished him for it, which they were known to do in a lot of cases in Greek myths.
Oh, they're so petty.
Right. So in this regard, this is where we get into existentialism and the idea of the absurd hero. And there's a really, really great essay by Albert Camus, I hear a lot of his social morals are kind of suspect, but a lot of his writing on existentialism is really on point. And this essay that he wrote about the myth of Sisyphus.
Say the name one more time.
Sisyphus.
Do, 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 do.
Oh my God. His point that he made is that Sisyphus is the embodiment of the absurd hero, which is maybe the hero doesn't succeed, maybe they're not doing anything particularly heroic at the moment. But the idea of continuing to try and continuing to do this thing, even if it's like banging your head against the wall, makes you heroic. And Sisyphus, he posits, is a hero for this boulder thing. He rolls the boulder up the hill. And when he gets to the top, he has this moment of he's got it up here at the top.
Mm-hmm.
He did it, and he knows it's going to roll back down, and he's going to have to do it again. So the rock rolls back down, and he decides in that moment to go back down and roll it up again, in that he doesn't regret the things he did to get here, and he's going to continue taking this punishment. But the fact that he decides to do it and willfully does it again and again and again sort of negates the fact that it's punishment at all.
That's a positive outlook.
It's really confusing to grasp. It's a very difficult subject. But that's the idea of Sisyphus being an absurd hero.
Okay.
And there is a term called like Sisyphean feats, which is...
Now you're just making these hard
to
say.
No, I'm not. And it's the idea of doing something again and again and again in a sort of punishment loop. But you add that aspect of the absurd hero and it brings a whole new dimension to it.
Okay.
And that's kind of what I'm going for with this portal thing, is in both the grand scheme of the game and each individual level, Chell is going through a Sisyphean loop where it's test after test after test after test. And if GLaDOS had her way, you'd probably be testing until you die.
Yes.
And I know there's, at the end of the levels, GLaDOS is like, okay, now we're going to throw you in an incinerator. And even when you escape, it's still level after level of using your portal gun to get through the different areas behind the scenes
mm-hmm.
in Aperture Labs. And again, the thing that probably adds to the purgatory aspect is you don't find anyone. All the screens are on and the electricity's still on, but no one else is here. You don't even find any bodies or anything.
We'll dive into that in a moment.
But you just have GLaDOS here telling you, keep testing, keep going, keep going. And there's never any way for you to end it unless you kind of break out. But at the end of the game, you get pulled back in. And then Portal 2 happens, and you're going again, and you're testing, and you're testing, and you're testing. And it's just this infinite loop. But Chell is heroic in that she's the one that, instead of being a passive test subject who just does this until she dies, she does it to learn the portal gun, to become able to break free, and then to use her knowledge to dismantle what's happening.
I like this thought process. I've not considered it that way before, but it's very fitting.
Yeah.
Because Chell is it, I hear it a lot of times called it her, a lot of times called Chell, and a lot of times called Shell. And I don't know what her name... I think it's Chell.
It's C-H-E-L-L, so pronounce it how you wish.
Well, because I think if you listen to the dev commentary for Portal 2, I believe Gabe Newell pronounces it Chell.
Yeah.
I think. I'll have to check again.
But that's the other thing is, like, I mean, just one more little comment is, no one, aside from GLaDOS making Chell test, no one is making her do anything. She is deciding.
You could argue the Rat Man.
Well, he's encouraging.
That's
saying,
true.
Go this way. He's saying the cake is a lie. And initially, he's not saying, do this, do that. He's putting notes down. Guided notes. To be like, you can do this. And this will get you through this test. This will help you escape. And so it's a guided thing. But I know it's dangerous to test, but it's significantly more dangerous to break out.
Oh, absolutely.
So Chell decides. And I think that's the absurd hero portion of it, is I'm going to do this very bad thing for me, and I'm going to decide to do it. And it turns out, again, you just go back into the loop.
Mm-hmm.
But I think each time this happens to her, each time she wakes up in this testing chamber, each time she has to go through another test, she's deciding to do it.
Hmm. I like that.
It gives you a power to what you're doing, this existential... I am here no matter how bad the situation is because I decided I would be.
Yeah. And I think one big thing that affected how the story would be what it is because how you were saying earlier, they didn't expect it to be this big thing. It was a college project mm-hmm. brought on board. I kind of suspect that Valve kind of went to their writing team and said, hey, guys, here's a game with portals. Make something fun.
Yeah.
And then the writers are like, all right, let's make this some silly shit. And when they found out that everyone loved Portal and they started working on Portal 2, and then they made a Portal comic, a digital comic book going on, that's when they really started to flesh out all of that absent information. And because we didn't really get that lore that people wanted, when we had none of that lore is when people started theorizing this theological.
Yeah, you can say theological.
This theological
this
theory.
Having to do with God theory.
Yeah. And that's what I was talking about earlier with the Rat Man. For those who do not know, in the comic book that they made, I can't remember what it was called, it tells a story that takes place during Portal 1.
Tales of the Rat Man or something.
Tales of the Rat Man, something like that. And it basically fills the gap between Portal 1 and Portal 2. And it's that GLaDOS, the big angry owl-style robot, neurogassed almost everyone except the test subjects. One particular scientist named Ratman, he managed to evade her and survive, but as his schizophrenia medicine started to wear out, he started to go more and more, well,
he started to succumb to this. He'd been keeping it under control, but then, you know, he's stuck in this lab, he can't get access to more medicine, and it just continues to get worse.
And it manifests in the form of a talking companion cube, which people believe that's why there's all those scribbling on the wall, like, about this person who loves companion cube, because it's him succumbing to his schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, he kind of guides the player, he's the reason that Chell woke up in the first game. He's the reason that she woke up in the other chamber in the second game. He's the reason there's all those writings on the wall telling her where to go, even outside of the test chambers. And, like, he's the man behind all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I love him. I love the concept of him.
I particularly love the concept of the Rat Man because he does embody one of my favorite concepts in a lot of action and sci-fi and sometimes horror, often horror, is the idea of someone who was here first and did all of these things that you have to go through right now. And he got so far and didn't make it. But because of what he left behind, like the clues and the helpful hints, knowing someone was going to follow, you can then go past him. Kind of like standing on the shoulders of giants idea.
Absolutely.
Is you can see further. So that's one of my favorite things, is particularly if that person never shows up. All you know of this person is the notes they leave behind.
Yeah, they become a legend.
Yes, and it makes you, like, all you know of this person is that they helped you get out when they knew they wouldn't. And that makes them their own absurd hero.
I love that part of them. Like, it's very, I don't want to say self-sacrificial, because it's not like they intended to fail.
Right, but they were thinking, if I'm going to go out, I might as well make it useful.
Yeah, like, I've seen, you know, Tomb Raider games where you'll cross a bridge or something, and the bridge will crumble, and like, oh, there's no way back. And you just continue on in your adventure. Well, there's never the time where somebody's like, oh, well, I'm going to just make a makeshift bridge for the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I that extra bit of effort I find very noble.
It is. It's extremely noble. And that's what's so great about this Portal game is you get, like, the first game, you just get little bits and pieces of this lore that they later developed.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they have little bits and pieces of this lore that make it so interesting and flavorful, and then when they went back and expanded further on that, it didn't ruin things. Often when you go back, like, prequel style to how you get where you are, it sort of ruins the legendary aspect of it. But I think it really only improves things as far as the Portal universe is concerned. I don't think it takes away from heroic nature of the Rat Man. I don't think it takes away from the the creepiness of GLaDOS to know where all of this came from. It, in fact, makes it even more exciting and even more creepy.
Absolutely. Like, knowing that GLaDOS killed everyone.
Oh, that too.
Like, but I think that really adds to the fact that she is uncaring of human life, and that the reason you're still alive is mostly because she's not done with you yet.
Right. And it also, even when you go into the second game, and you learn about Cave Johnson, and you learn about Carolyn, and you learn about GLaDOS's oranges.
Carolyn!
It kind of blows your mind to think this crazy evil robot was supposed to be so different.
Say goodbye, Carolyn. Goodbye, Carolyn.
Yeah.
Isn't she a peach?
Yeah. So I think that's something I really, really admire Valve for, is their ability to tell this story and continue telling the story and never detract from what makes it good.
Yeah, I agree entirely.
That's why, I mean, I know we were talking about how people are kind of down on Valve a little bit because they don't produce games anymore. They just focus on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes it's like when a TV show doesn't go more than 5 seasons. Or, like, I'm not going to say it because it'll make people mad, but I have some thoughts on Firefly. But where it doesn't continue past the point of it being good. So if they had continued producing game after game after game, the quality would wear down.
And a very valid concern, and it's a heartbreaking one, like, on an industry side. Because when you see somebody, they make a game, everyone loves it. They make a sequel, everyone loves it even more.
Yeah.
Like, when you have this track record that's proven that you can make a good, successful game that just hits all of the right boxes, you want them to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the nature of the thing.
But you can really appreciate the fact that a lot of the really good games that Valve made age super well. Their replayability is pretty high.
Absolutely.
You can go back and find more stuff and play it again and again and again. And so even if they're not making more games, you're still left with something that can last.
Have you heard about the Black Mesa project?
No.
The first Half-Life game, Valve's flagship game. Fantastic game. I love it. It ages really well, despite its aged graphics and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, many others feel the same as I do. So one group of people, they take in the world, the levels, everything, and they remade it with modern graphics.
Oh.
And that's basically all it is a modern graphic recreation of the first Half-Life. And Valve actually approved of it. They when they found out about it, they're like, yeah, sell this game. Make your money. This is worth it.
Nice.
And I think that's one of the best fan projects I've ever seen, because it does really well of keeping true to everything about the original Half-Life that made it so good, while giving me the pleasure of modern, you know, capabilities.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, this also showcases another reason why I think I still respect Valve as a company, despite them not doing what they initially, you know, were for, was making games. And you talked about how on the Steam front, they're not the best at service and
Their customer service is lacking.
But, I mean, I still think that aspect alone is probably not enough to really condemn them for much, because they do have, and I wish I could remember what the term is, but I keep thinking business morality, where they really have their goals and their sights in the right direction. So like you said, this fan project, and Valve was like, yes, do this thing, make your money, this is a great idea.
Oh yeah, had somebody made like a fan-made Sims game, you can guarantee that EA Games is going to be like, no, shut this down. Like, they won't let even people get that away for free.
I mean, Valve, sure, is here to make money. That's what Steam is about. But they're also here to provide what people want. So Steam, like you said before, is like the leading video game marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so accessible and fairly easy to use.
Yeah, they make it
fairly secure.
I remember Gabe Newell, I believe himself, said that the key to combating video game piracy is to make it easier to buy the game.
Yeah.
And that's basically what Steam did, is they made it easy to find the games you want. They made it easy to buy them and to own them and access them everywhere. they've made a really good marketplace, you know, overall. It's just when you get that big, of course, you're going to have problems.
Right. I mean, like I said, they've got their sites in the right place. They have this accessible marketplace for games so that people can have them. They let people do these fan-made things that update their games when maybe they don't have the resources to do so at the moment. They not only allow particularly Portal to be used for educational purposes, they actively worked with educators to make a system in which Portal can be used in coursework to teach these ideas.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that they found, you know, this other college project.
Right.
And they made it into the thing it is. They could have stolen it. Yeah.
Instead, they took on these students and said, hey, we're going to give you a job because this is brilliant.
Yeah. Valve, as a developer, they're very wholesome and good.
Yeah.
And playing Portal again has reminded me about why people had such a positive mindset towards the company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're really good. As a corporate business, I can understand why people would be fussy. But as a game developer, they're fantastic.
I think, yeah, as a company and a business, I think it's so, so, so rare to find someone that actually cares about the product and the service they're providing over their margins and dividends and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so refreshing to look into Valve's background and not find things that are gross and make me uncomfortable. Like, these are great games delivered by great people. And I hope they deliver more games and stuff in the future. But if not, like, I'm just happy with what actually happened.
I agree. Well, that just about wraps it up for us. We've been talking about Portal, and I guess Portal 2 kind of can encompass this episode as well.
Yeah, it's all.
We basically brought them together.
Yeah.
So, if you like this, be sure to leave a review on iTunes. That really helps us get seen by others. You can follow us on Twitter at Cozy Co-op Podcast, and you can find us on Facebook of the same name. You can also, if wanting to leave feedback, you can send emails to cozycoop@thelizardrock.com. The news that you heard earlier can be found at thelizardrock.com. That's my personal site where I write news every evening about whatever things happened in the game industry that day.
And if you have any suggestions for future games you'd like us to discuss and talk about, you can go ahead and you can tweet at us, you can send us an email. And if we tell you what game we're going to do next week, you can go ahead and, if you have a fun fact you want to make sure we mention, or, you know, some thoughts on the game or whatnot, you can feel free to send that in too. You might get mentioned on the show.
And our next game, well, whether you're sailing the high seas or just getting salty, we'll be talking about the recently released Sea of Thieves.
That is
how about you say that one?
Sea of Thieves, for those that can't get through Brandon's lisp.
Which, for Xbox One and PC, we'll be talking about that next week.
That's it for today. Cozy up with us next week on the Cozy Co-op. Outro music.
I'm going to say that every time.